Today's episode is brought to you by Locker Room. Download the app and join myself and Doug Norrie tonight after the game between the Celtics and your Brooklyn Nets as we break down the action and talk to you, the fans. Locker Room, changing the way we talk sports. And of course, it's another great episode coming up for you with myself and Doug Norrie. First and foremost, it is the Game 3 matchup, first of the series in Boston between our Brooklyn Nets and the Boston Celtics. And unfortunately, more injury news. The bug that seems to have followed the Nets throughout the season strikes again. This time, it's Jeff Green. What does it mean, not just in the short term of the next two games, potentially, of a sweep series for Brooklyn, but long term? What if it lingers into round two? How will they replace him? What are some of the possibilities they may try to get a look at in this series so that they can refine themselves and be prepared to replace his minutes in critical matchups down the road? And then off the court, we highlighted Kyrie's comments around racism in Boston and his experience as a player. Danny Ainge has a response, and unfortunately, it just rings of tone deafness to the circumstances and experiences not only of Kyrie, but of his own players in the Boston Celtics building. We'll dive into all of that right after the theme music.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome back to the Locked On Nets podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, the Brooklyn Nets, every single day, including the weekends this one time around. That is Adam Armbrecht. He's the host of the One Giant podcast covering the New York football Giants. He's also the voice of the Brooklyn Nets on Sportscaster. I'm Doug Norrie, owner-operator, DFSR.com. Got you covered for all the projections you'd ever need, every single sport. Head on over there if you need some stuff for FanDuel and DraftKings. Buddy, how are you doing on the Eve? No, Eve's the day before. On the day of Game 3, Nets-Celtics, how are we feeling going into the weekend?
Listen, you and I, we get together, we exchange text messages, we talk about what do we want to cover, what's the rundown of the podcast going to be, and then as we went to record this, we go ahead and throw that out the window as official news comes down for Brooklyn, and all of a sudden, what feels like a theme maybe of the season, a little adjustment here, little kink in the old pipeline here for the Brooklyn Nets as they look to wrap up this series with the Boston Celtics. Maybe just some things we have to think about now more than we wanted to.
Yeah, so Jeff Green, he left last game, game two, with a foot issue. There was really no word about what the situation was, except that he never came back in. He played a few first half minutes, I think eight total, before leaving with the foot injury. And then it comes out on Thursday afternoon that he is going to miss at least 10 days. They said he's going to be reevaluated in 10 days. So this is going to be an extended time missed for him. And I mean, frankly, when you're looking at evaluating after 10 days, we could be looking at the whole playoffs. I don't know. I don't want to go too negative here, but as someone who's covered the Nets here for enough time to know that the injury reports are never at the left end of the timeline when it comes to the prediction about when they're going to come back. And so it's plantar fasciitis. That's bad if you're a basketball player, because it's severe pain in the foot. If you don't know what that is, it can be a really sticky injury because it can be tough to know if you're fully recovered. And look, Jeff Green and we're going to get into what it means for the Nets as a team. This is pretty important, I would say, is that he's not exactly a spring chicken here. This guy's put a lot of NBA miles on his body. He's still in phenomenal shape. He had a great season, but he's no spring chicken. And when you get a foot injury like this, and then you get this 10-day timeline for him, I'm concerned a little bit about when/if we were to see Jeff Green come back. We know for certain it's not going to be in this series, and depending on when things wrap up, we can kind of see where it goes. But pretty bad loss here for the Nets.
Yeah, and when you talk again, you say the reevaluation, no matter which way you slice it, even not having him isn't going to prevent the Nets, I don't think, from sweeping the Boston Celtics. Maybe a gentleman sweep, depending on how one of these games might go at the TD Garden. But this series is lost. Okay, not that big of a deal. Jeff Green has been an important piece. Go back and check the episodes if you want. We've consistently pointed to him as being one of the most relied upon veteran players in this rotation, and not just from a minute share or something, as we were recently talking about Blake Griffin and how he's been since he's come over to the Nets. Jeff Green has been someone that can be relied upon for consistency on both ends of the floor. I'm not saying that he is a world beater on the defensive end, but you knew what you were going to get from him. And I, as we said, when you have superstar talent, what you want is something you can rely on behind them. And when you talk about losing Jeff Green potentially now, maybe for the next round of the playoffs, what you replace him with is going to be a question mark. You might know what Blake Griffin is, and then you could say, and here's the problem with having extra minutes on his workload potentially. And then the other options you look at across this roster are going to be, well, depends on what the matchup is, depends on what the opposition does. And based on that, we could be looking at minus matchups as opposed to neutral or even positive matchups when you talk about having Green in there.
That want to switch a lot on defense, or when they do want to switch, he's pretty important for being able to do that. So all this stuff really is kind of a bummer. I hate to say that there's role player, the hierarchy of role players. This is not losing one of the big three, obviously. But at this point in the Nets season, there's a group of guys that are really important for them winning the championship, right? This isn't like losing one of the other three guys. But in terms of guys you really can't afford to lose, they're going to start only going probably eight guys in a rotation when it comes down to the games really mattering. This season, the series is not that, so I'm not worried about this series. But when we get down to eight-man rotations, yeah, he was definitely one of the eight guys, right? Like, he was, and that's where he played 27 minutes in that first game where they needed to come back and win. Those were leverage minutes he was playing, and he closed out the game for them. So, this one hurts. We could talk in a little bit here about where the Nets go from here, who replaces him, but maybe we got a little clue last game, but not totally because it was a blowout. But I couldn't help but just feel really, just, I don't know, not bummed. That's the wrong word, but just sort of like, oh no. And because one last thing with this is that it's funny with the way the Nets are constructed. I started thinking about this as he got hurt. I didn't have time to go look this up before, from the time I had the thought to the time we start recording. I'll have it for next time. It was, I was actually wondering what the average age was for the core group of players that are playing in the playoffs. And I have to believe that the Nets group is, if not the oldest, then very close to the oldest average group of guys who play meaningful minutes, right? And so it's just kind of like one of those things where it's a bummer. And as a Nets fan right now, you can't be all that surprised with injuries, because this is not a group of fourth and fifth year players who are reaching their prime, right? Like, this is not the way they've been constructed. I understand why they're not constructed this way. It's very clear why not. But Jeff Green is sort of a, this is not, it's a sort of an example that might end up proving the rule about what happens when you go for a championship around just veteran players. Like, this is kind of the thing that can happen.
Well, and I think too, when you look back at mentioning what a great regular season that he did have, think about the time missed for the three stars as well, Harden towards the end of the season, but with the time away for Irving, with Kevin Durant, automatically my kind of thought was too, veteran player like Jeff Green, boy, did you burn him out during the year getting here, and this is kind of that culmination. And well, he's had a couple little nagging injuries during the year, and they've all seemed, you know, fluky, relatively speaking, just one-off, random, depending on the game, the situation, the instance that occurs, but he has had them. And now you start to go back and chronicle those, right? The shoulder, now it's the plantar fascia. And you think about, unfortunately, you maybe would have liked to have had one more healthy body. Now all of a sudden we think about LMA and him retiring, right? If you had had that extra body, especially the, you know, 4/5 kind of role here, maybe the Nets wouldn't have used Jeff Green as much as they did during the year. But you needed to check off X number of win boxes. We know how things went down the stretch, securing the number 2 seed, et cetera. So you had to use Jeff Green. He was important. And now maybe that comes at the price of losing him for a couple of these series where you just, now you have to retool. You have to rethink it and figure out how do you cover these minutes that he's been playing for you. He went over 1,200 minutes this year for the Brooklyn Nets. So he was a significant contributor as basically 1,800, excuse me, almost 1,900 minutes. So he was second on the team in terms of minutes behind only Joe Harris. That's how important he was as far as filling game to game for the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah, okay, we'll talk about what the Nets maybe do here in Game 3. They're afforded some little latitude probably with the way the rest of the series is going to go, but this is definitely a piece that they are going to need to think really actively now about how to replace those minutes because, like I said, these could be, and they're almost definitely going to be, leverage minutes. First, going to talk to you about our friends over at Built Bar, absolute best protein bar on the market, bar none, point period, full stop. You probably tried other protein bars out there. You can know they can kind of taste like cardboard, maybe like a wet sponge. Not Built Bar, absolutely delicious with a focus on the flavors, coconut, cherry, raspberry, mint, brownie, double chocolate. These are not ice cream flavors, folks. These are actual protein bar flavors, something that is actually good for you. 17 grams of protein, only 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, just 4 grams of net carbs. Those are the protein bar stats that you want to hear. You can order today and get one of those delicious flavors. I'm a mint brownie kind of guy lately. Go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKED15, and there you're going to get 15% off your first order. You have to use the promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com.
And so now when we think about game three and games three and four here, the rest of the series with Boston and trying to figure out how do you replace Jeff Green and what might the Nets staff, because these next two games become somewhat important in that regard, because you're not just trying to fill minutes to get through a series against Boston. You're trying to maybe understand how you're going to look at the upcoming series potentially with a team like Milwaukee. The interesting thing I'll say is, you know, we've talked about Blake Griffin a little bit, and this is where I think, you know, numbers are never the end-all be-all, and we said that before. You go look at the Raptor rating. Offensive rating, Blake Griffin has the sixth highest on the team. Just behind him is Jeff Green, who actually has a negative net offensive rating, which I was a little bit surprised to see. When you flip over to the defensive side of it, Blake Griffin has the second highest defensive rating on this roster. That astounds me in some ways. Jeff Green, again, big liabilities way down the list. Overall, Jeff Green is a negative 1.8 Raptor rating. Blake Griffin is a positive 2. Take what away from whatever you want from that. The bigger thing to me is if automatically you say, well, Blake Griffin's been starting, he's going to stay in that role. Okay, but what are you doing after him? Who's coming in off the bench? We've seen Bruce Brown get some minutes runs here in these games, but he hasn't been lining up at that pseudo five role we saw him use extensively during the regular season for stretches. And then we talk about a guy like Nicholas Claxton, who we all think has tremendous defensive upside, is a bit of a dud on offense for big stretches. And that's okay on a team like this, but how much risk reward do you want to run of maybe Claxton getting beaten up in a couple of games and doing some damage to his confidence? Because if Green is going to be gone for an extended amount of time, you're probably going to need Claxton far deeper into this playoff run than you initially anticipated coming in. And I didn't even throw out the idea of a DeAndre Jordan sighting here potentially.
Yeah, see, it's so weird because the guys you throw out there are obviously the next sort of guys up, and none of them are really Jeff Green comps. Like, they're not like, none of that is a Jeff Green light kind of player. It's funny to say that because it's not usually a guy you would say. You know, usually it's like, oh, it's like this other superstar getting the light version. But the thing with Jeff Green is his ability, like I said, his length, his athleticism still, he's 34, but the athleticism is still definitely there. We see it a lot with when he tries to posterize people on a nearly game-to-game basis. Is none of those guys you mentioned are really good functional replacements for what he does. So it just means you're shifting around sort of what you're trying to do. And that could end up being the bigger problem because, right, you can play great Blake Griffin some more minutes. You can't play him 20 more minutes a game, right? So that's really not – like you're going to get a few more minutes out of Blake, but you're not going to get – you can't just start running Blake Griffin 35 minutes, and you don't want to. So that's really not the solution. The Claxton thing is just means a different scheme because he's not going to do the same things Jeff Green does, which is space, corner three, right, slash to the basket at times. That's just not Nick's game. You know, for as much as he brings, that's just not it. And same with Bruce Brown. So while those are the guys that are probably going to get the minutes, you're probably, at least in this series, you can get away with way more Bruce Brown minutes than you can in series going forward. So I don't, like, Bruce Brown can play a lot more against the Celtics than he can against the Bucks, right? Yeah. So I think for now, you don't worry. You kind of kick the problem down the road a little bit. And I'm not sure how much we learn from the rest of the series because there's just the things you can get away with that you can in other ones. Or if we just see an instant increase like in Nick Claxton minutes or if we see more TLC. I know no one wants to hear that, but but this is what I'm saying.
If the linchpin going forward for the Brooklyn Nets championship run is TLC, wow, are we in a state?
Well, the reason I say it is because he's not a comp for Jeff Green, but he at least does some things similar to Green in the way that those other guys don't.
Right?
This is the problem.
Yeah, and that was, so again, when you talk about Claxton, when you talk about Bruce Brown, you know, on the one hand, you can say, well, the upside is probably the defensive piece, right? Like, I'm okay, at least in this series, for a couple more games with Bruce Brown. Okay, you're going to be oversized on the defensive end. That's okay. You've shown the ability to stay in front of people. Nicholas Claxton, obviously, you've done a great job. You're versatile. You can switch. But that shooting piece on the offensive end, obviously, neither one of those two players does that for you. And then, you know, even if you said, who else has done a nice job for you? A guy we were surprised kind of got shuffled down a little bit in the rotation, like Tyler Johnson. But to your point, Tyler Johnson isn't a Jeff Green light. Like, TLC really is. He looks like a slightly smaller version of Jeff Green in a lot of ways, and that's a heavy ask for a guy that we've seen at best. It's actually really funny that you say it like that, because if you cast your mind back and think about TLC sample sizes, he basically does all of the things that Jeff Green does, just not as well, right? I mean, like, he tries to overextend himself offensively. He doesn't knock down as high a percentage of triples, and he gets himself caught into some weird spots and overextends what you should want him to do, whereas Jeff Green has always done a good job for the Nets so far this year playing within himself.
Yeah, he makes tons of mistakes, like, in a way that Jeff Green doesn't. It's just, and it's funny too, size-wise, and I know people don't think he's 15 pounds lighter, but he's 6'7", 220, Jeff Green's 6'8", 235. Like, so yep. When we're talking about a lighter version, that actually probably
it's
is
all in
the
spelling. It's all
well,
that
this is.
Is
why this is why no one wants to hear this as an answer, right? This is why no one wants to think about this as being the functional replacement, because the guys we mentioned before are not, they're replacements in minutes, but not in scheme. Mm-hmm. Right, like, it's not, you're not replacing the same scheme that Jeff Green has, so you just have to do something different, and that different thing could be okay, and we're gonna be okay, but there's so much less optionality around, because Jeff Green allows you to do a couple. He is versatile in a way that allows you to, like, play him small ball five. He can guard a bigger wing on the other team and not get totally railroaded, right? He can do these other things. He can actually take a Kevin Durant assignment on defense for stretches and give him a spell. They don't have another guy on the team that can do that. And so, and it's like Joe Harris can't either, but they're already played Joe Harris 37 minutes. There's no more minutes to be had out of Joe Harris, right? So it's like there's not this binary solution for Jeff Green. And these were all the thoughts that went spinning through my head when I first saw he was going to be out for 10 days, was thinking, of all the role players to not lose, like, this is one that's not, they can't really quickly or functionally replace this guy. Is it the guy that loses you a championship? No, probably not. But it makes you have to kind of scramble, because he was an important dude. Again, in the game against Boston, that mattered. He closed the game. This was part of the group that we called, like, the Nets death lineup that at times was going to be almost impossible to guard. It's because Jeff Green can do things on this team that other guys simply can't. So I hate to go. I made a joke on Twitter that the Nets should just tank 3 games against the Celtics, go to game 7 and just see if they can get him back. like just give themselves a little bit longer of a timeline on the injury. Just say, hey, let's just lose 3 and then we'll just go win game 7 and then at least we'll have some time. We'll give some time to see if he can get healthy or not. I mean, they're obviously not going to do that, but. The thought went through my head, and I was only like 93% kidding.
Did cross my mind, right? Well, the interesting thing you do mention here, as far as, and again, will they test this out or not? But let's say that Jeff Green is out for a full series beyond this one with Boston. When you mentioned Joe Harris, I do think we just spent a couple episodes ago really singing his praises, and we've mentioned him throughout the year, the effort on the defensive end as well, and we know what he does offensively. I wonder if they'll play with the idea in this kind of positionless basketball of maybe kicking, you know, do you kick Joe Harris up and let him play outmatched and oversized against, you know, Celtics fours, and you get Kevin Durant into that five kind of role? Because if you do that, Then you're talking about maybe you put Bruce Brown out there at the three. Now he can still give you the defensive upside. You use him with Joe Harris, so the balance is there a little bit more. And as you start to rotate in other minutes, you're not trying to do it at the 4-5. You're trying to do it at the 3-4. And that may be the way, as the Nets are, obviously, as we know, a very small team to begin with. That might be the way to keep the best balance between your starting unit and then coming in off the bench, is to think about how do we shuffle from our three up and then replace his minute shares in a different way. Because to your point, you've already maxed out how much you're going to use Joe Harris. Maybe you try to use him in a slightly different position, and then you fill in with guys that are a little bit smaller. It would give you the flexibility to say, maybe a Tyler Johnson, maybe Bruce Brown, right? Maybe you can work them in there if you're asking them to do something different than be Jeff Green light.
Yeah.
This is all a way for me to avoid having TLC play minutes, by the way. That's my end goal.
The answer, what you're going to get, is just what happened last game when Jeff Green played 12 minutes. That, you know, Claxton played 18 and Bruce Brown played 22, and now it probably turns into like Claxton 21 and Bruce Brown 25, and you just get that's not exactly right, because the starters played so many fewer minutes. But it probably is something like that to start. Go with whatever they were sort of trusting already. And then see what
happens. I hope Claxton lights it up, by the way. Nothing would be better for his confidence going forward, regardless of results down the road, if he gets bigger minute shares these next two games and he just looks dominant, you know, for what his role is.
Yeah, we'll see this game. Obviously, we're going to have to see it. He's not going to play. So we're going to. And the place to look for it, though, is in this first rotation. He had been steadily coming in right around the 5-minute mark and spelling. They would take Harden and Blake off the court, and Bruce Brown and Jeff Green would come in. Right around the 5-minute mark of the first quarter. So, if you're looking for something in this next game, look what happens right around that six to five minute mark for the Nets, and who comes in that first group, because that's going to be the group, because that's exactly where he's coming. Yep. Both games in terms of that rotation. All right, we're going to get into just a little bit more on the Kyrie thing and the comments that he made and sort of the Celtics response here in a second. First, got to talk to you about our friends over at Bet Online. Fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Even though they lost Jeff Green, that's still massive favorites on Bet Online to take this series. So no worries there. Basketball playoffs in full swing. So is baseball season. Maybe you're into hockey. Maybe you're into UFC on the weekends. It's all there for you on Bet Online. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. It's your chance to get into the game as the teams make their run through the playoffs. Head on over to the website, betonline.ag. On your mobile device, sign up today. That's totally free. You're going to want to make that deposit, though. And when you do, make sure you use the promo code LOCKEDON, just like our podcast network. They're going to give you a 50% welcome bonus. It's got to be that first deposit, though. 50% welcome bonus, first deposit, promo code locked on, bet online, your online sportsbook experts.
And got to tell you about our friends over at rockauto.com. I'm driving down the road the other day, me and my lady friend. All of a sudden, the AC goes out. 98 degrees outside, sweating bullets, don't know which way is up. So I know I'm going to have to replace this part, and I don't want to go into a random auto parts store, have them tell me they don't know if they have it the right make, the right model. No. I go over to rockauto.com, where I know they're going to have every make and model of cars that I'm looking to repair. I get it, and I also get it for a really good price. And that's one of the reasons to repair and maintain your own car, is save money that you can use for more important things, like mortgage, maybe a food, meal, a night out. Everyone's getting back out there. You head over to rockauto.com, where it's a family-owned business serving auto part customers online for 20 years. Rockauto.com allows you to shop for auto body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts and tail lamps, even motor oil and a new carpet if you need it. The rockauto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, rockauto.com is always reliably low on their pricing, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers alike. Go to rockauto.com right now and see the parts available for your car or truck. Write "Locked On" in their "How'd You Hear About Us" box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. And so, as you mentioned, we talked about it last episode. Kyrie came out, made some comments about what goes on in Boston, that fans can be racist, they can shout some pretty nasty things at you when you're there, and he hoped that it wouldn't be the case. The only reason I think we touch back into this is because Danny Ainge, GM for the Boston Celtics, kind of came out with what I would call a tone-deaf statement on this topic. He was speaking on 98.5, the sports hub, a local Boston radio station, and he said, quote, "I think that we take those kind of things seriously. I've never heard any of that from any player that I've ever played with in my 26 years in Boston. I've never heard that before from Kyrie, and I talked to him quite a bit." Here's the problem, Doug, if I may. Going back to a 2020 Players Tribune article that Marcus Smart had an interview in, he said, quote, "But the incident that stuck with me the most and that's had the biggest impact on me occurred a few years back after a victory at the Garden. I was pulling out of the arena parking lot when I saw a white woman and her 5 or 6-year-old son crossing against the light right as the cars were starting to come at them. I had my windows down and realized something bad was about to happen, so I yelled to her politely that she needed to hurry and get out of the street so the two of them wouldn't get hurt. The woman was wearing an Isaiah Thomas number 4 Celtics jersey, and there were all of those Celtics fans around her who were at the game. I figured she'd be cool. Nope. She swung her head around, and it was, 'F you, you effing N-word.'" If you're Danny Ainge, I don't know, pile of steaming dung in the road, and you just step your entire foot and face into it. This screams of tone deafness, because you're one of your own players that's been with your team since it was drafted with your team. Has this experience. So if you're in tune with your players and you've had these conversations, I don't know. This is why when we talked the other day about, hey, there's nuance to these things, everyone has their own experiences, this screamed of Danny Ainge saying, "I haven't experienced any racism.
Yeah.
I'm just a white guy owning, you know, I'm just a white guy running a team. What's the big deal?"
Yeah, it's like, well, it's not funny. I'm using funny as like an operative word to describe like sad, but it's funny. Yeah. It's funny in that it's like the surreal. In that this the comments that Ainge makes. So it's one of these things where, okay, do I expect Danny Ainge to go on to a talk show? He's got to do a PR run through it. These guys have to do their jobs in this way. Do I expect him to go over and just be Kyrie's totally right and just agree and agree with Kyrie? No, of course not. I don't think anyone was expecting to do that. But yeah, I can. It's like you just want to be the PR arm for these guys and say, "Hey, here's what you just say. I've never experienced that before, but I'm going to make it a priority to go talk to my players and see if that's something that I just haven't heard, that now that it's come out, I'm going to go." And then either you kick the can down the road a little bit, or you actually address it, or you just do something functional. This is the part where you say this thing, and then you have Marcus Smart literally said, "Yeah, I've heard it. I heard a couple of things. This is a quote. It's hard to hear that and have support us as players. It's kind of sad and sickening." Like, it just means you didn't talk to them, right? So it's one of those things where you say, are you stupid or are you a liar? Because it really can't be. Yeah. It's really actually at this point only one of the two. Are you stupid and you lied and said something? Excuse me. Sorry. Or stupid and liar. You can be the third one, I guess.
You can also go and then double down and be both if you want.
Right, but it's your choice, Danny. Are you kind of dumb and just didn't actually, you know, ever address it, or just are willfully ignorant, or you just lied and said you talked to people and you actually didn't? Because if one of your players who plays, like you said, plays on the team now, has no problem, and is probably, frankly, like you said, and you had made a good point about this yesterday, where younger players feel more compelled to sort of speak up about stuff like this because they look up to Kyrie and they use Kyrie as some, you know, sort of like not an idol, but as a role model for how they want to carry themselves. When he says something and you know that you at least have him at your back, right, then you feel like you can maybe speak a more truth than you would have felt comfortable before. So if Ainge comes out and says that and then is not instantly, but is at least historically basically the exact opposite comes out from Marcus Smart, I just don't know. I was just like, man, who coached you up before this interview? Like, there's lots of things you could say where you don't know the answer and you're looking into it or whatever, right? You're addressing it, or it might not be a problem, but you don't want to just deny it. There's so many ways to answer this question, for at least from a PR. I don't know if I'm more offended on a racist level or a PR level. Like which one's worse? They're both so. I mean, obviously the racism one's terrible. I'm kidding about that. But in general, it was just wrong. It's hard to be wrong on so many different bottom lines, and Ainge somehow checked the bottom on all of them.
I'm offended as, you know, a person who is against racism. I'm offended for someone being tone deaf on a subject matter. I'm offended as a person who respects intelligence, right? Like you say, PR hand on Danny Ainge's shoulder. Hey, bud, need anything to check in on here before you hit the radio waves? I'm all good, friend. Don't worry about me.
Well, the sad thing is, frankly, and this is probably where it lands, is that when you go on these radio shows, you... Oh, man. I might end up taking this out of the podcast. I'm not sure. We'll see. We'll see if this one lands. But what you probably do know who you're talking to, who's out there listening. And if you're doing a thing where you want someone else, a group, to hear what they want to hear, then that's the third option.
Yeah.
The third option, which I didn't consider is until now, because my brain, frankly, doesn't ever think this way, is the third option.
How do the racists feel?
Well, I know what the – or maybe they're not racist, but I know what the fan base wants to hear about when they're trying to look inward. And I'm not calling a fan base racist. That's not what I'm doing. But you might know what a group – if you're associated with a group of people, you might not be the thing they got called, by the way. There's good chance. There's many, many people that – most people are not racist. That's just – I think. I want to believe, at least not on, an overt level. But if you think that you know what the demographic of a group that's listening to a station wants to hear, then actually this is what you say, right? Because – and that has to be the third option that I didn't consider. So all three are terrible. Again, this one – this one would be the one where it was crafted, and that's actually maybe the worst of the three. But no matter which way you slice it, it's bad because one of your other players has directly contradicted it, and it just ends up, at least from a outsider perspective, ends up looking like a really, really bad look.
Yeah, and listen, again, we talked about this, right? Nuanced situations. I don't mean that if you yell something racist, it means that you're being racist. There's no nuance to that. But the idea that something like this comes up, Danny Ainge, you can walk right downstairs, go into the locker room, talk to your players, gauge how they feel about it, and then you can go ahead and address it with what feels like both representative of the things that maybe you feel like you've experienced being a part of the organization and around the city of Boston, and then also what your players have experienced and how they reacted and felt regarding what Kyrie said. This is about anything in life. Go ahead and have a conversation. Go ahead and source information, right? That's the way you come to what will feel like the most reasonable conclusion on something is, how is everyone else experiencing the circumstance that we're in? Not, you know what? This is how I saw it, and that's how I'm going to say it, and that's how I'm going to feel it and take it, and everybody else is entitled to their own opinion, but I'm kind of inside of this own bubble. So listen, we don't want to drag this down into this, but if you're going to be Danny Ainge in that position, guess what? You are subject to public scrutiny when this is the kind of message that you send out there and can very much be interpreted, as you said, to that third option. What is the message you're trying to send to some demographic that may exist within your fan base?
Yeah. Again, this wasn't the plan. To talk about this more, but when someone just throws it out there, it's just going to be a talking point going into the game. It's more of a talking point now than it even was. It was just kind of hard to believe going in to Friday's game. Okay. Speaking of Friday's game, we are going to be on Locker Room following Friday's game. We're going to jump in there. We're usually in there maybe 15 minutes after the final whistle blows or the final buzzer sounds. I can't remember what happens in basketball. One of those two things that signifies the end of the game. When that happens, go about 10, 15 minutes out and check your Locker Room app. We will be on there. We're going to broadcast live. We'll probably end up doing a full show and then taking folks in to talk about the game. It's always awesome to jump in there after games. Everyone's got some thoughts and takes they want to come in hot with. We know it. So and then we'll do a bonus episode for over the weekend as well. So we got a lot of things planned here for Friday night. Make sure you download that Locker Room app. Follow Locked On Nets. You can follow Adam or I. Also at Adam Armbrecht, at Doug Norrie. You'll see when we go live. So check out the Locker Room app after the game. And we'll be there doing the show, like I said, sometime on Friday night when the game ends.
Maybe if Danny had someone like this in his life who just leaned in and said, "Mac, let me stop you right there. First of all, your breath smells like an old lady's fart passing through an onion." D. Reynolds.
Oh, one of the all-time great poets. We'll be back again Friday night on Locker Room and over the weekend talking more Brooklyn Nets basketball.